Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, and it's 1:32 p.m. With me today, Vice Chairman Senator Costello, and then we've got Senator Bishop, our finance representative as well, and Senator Birch. And Senator Gray Jackson is excused for state business at this time. She really, really wanted to be here for today, and so she has deep regards that she could not be here today. So please, electronic devices, flick your cell phone off or the ringer off at minimum. Today we're going to be hopefully getting SB 52 out of committee today, the Title IV re-rate. And then we have Senator Bishop's SB 50 up, the Employment Tax for Education Facilities. And we will be starting, and you guys have been really great to work with. Thank you, Vice Chairman, for all your help on Title IV. And you guys have really been a great, great collaborative group. And your staff has worked incredibly hard on this as well, Senator Michicki. So we're going to go ahead and start with this. I want you to all be aware that we have Erica McConnell online for questions. She's with the Alcohol Marijuana Control Board. We also have Anna Brawley, and I believe Brandon, are you in the audience? Brandon Spanos? Is he not here yet? Okay. So, because we do have a fiscal note we're going to be going over. So we have one amendment left that we're going to be addressing. We're going to be addressing a fiscal note and getting a few other points that, of things we're going to be taking on in the future in regards to this bill in the next committee of referral. And then if it's the will of the committee, we will be getting this this amendment out. With that, Senator Costello?
Madam Chair, I move Amendment 31-LS0004/U.8 before the committee.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was an issue that lingered from last year's bill that we this language corrects that issue. So essentially what we were trying to do, it originally said that at least 80% of each final product that contains, we're moving it to the fermentation process of all. I'll technically describe the amendment and then I can tell you what it does. So page 6, line 13 deletes at least 80% of each final product that contains, and it inserts the words the fermentation process of all. On page 6, line 14, it deletes be manufactured and inserts the word occur. On page 6, line 20, deletes at least 80% of each final product that contains and inserts the fermentation process of all. And on page 6, line 21, it deletes be manufactured and inserts incur on the premises of. And, oh, okay. What that does, Madam Chairman and committee members, is Section 0409020C contains language that specifies what a manufacturer is in the state of Alaska. The language for all manufacturers may contain either 80% of each final product or fermentation of that final product. To clarify the language, this defines that any business in Alaska who is manufacturing alcohol is actually manufacturing alcoholic product in the state of Alaska and not simply importing it, relabeling the product. So this is protecting our small business owners. As Senate Bill 52 sets out to clearly define regulation on manufacturers in Alaska, this language serves to manage the variety of issues. It ensures that consumers who seek to purchase locally made beverages are protected from companies that bring in finished product to the state of Alaska, repackage the product, and claim that it is made in Alaska. Federal law prohibits such activities. However, the state of Alaska laws currently do not. This is kind of the Budweiser suddenly claiming that they're a local manufacturer issue. It protects local manufacturers from outside companies creating shell breweries that have very small-scale manufacturing equipment and ship beer from outside of Alaska to be sold in tasting rooms. It protects the limited license system for tasting rooms from being monopolized by large manufacturers that, again, could create those shell breweries in numerous communities. And the subsection also closes the loophole, allowing a large manufacturer that would otherwise not be allowed to sell direct to consumers, own a tasting room, or a licensed premise from creating a subsidiary company and selling that parent company's product under a subsidiary name. So So this amendment is in protection of those that have invested in small manufacturing entities within the state of Alaska. These are our friends and neighbors. This is the manufacturer on the corner. This is not open to investment from large outside companies that want to take over the industry in Alaska.
Okay, did you have a question? Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Machicki. Has there been any response from industry on this amendment that is negative or that you know of?
No, we worked with industry on this amendment. In fact, a good part of what I've said today is their logic on separating the two. Remember, those larger companies can already operate. They just can't operate in this manner. Okay. So we've only had support and no opposition to this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Birch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not that familiar with does anybody in the alcohol industry use like a feedstock? Like I think we had an aunt that made a cranberry liqueur, and they use like an Everclear or something like that as a base, and then mixed stuff up. But I'm just not that familiar with the industry. I just didn't know if that would tangle anybody up that makes a product in Alaska today that uses as a feedstock, something that's shipped up here by the barrel full. And I'm not that familiar with the unintended consequences of something like this. And nothing comes to mind, but I just was curious if you could speak to that.
So I think manufacturers use whatever local materials they possibly can, but it's not possible for them to use ferment without some outside materials being right. brought in, and that was why the 80% thing didn't work. But you've tasted the spruce tip pops. I know they're using some valley grains. It's just impossible to have that percentage of locally produced goods. But I think everyone tries. I'm actually amazed at how many concoctions you've come up with, Senator Birch, that sound really delicious, but I don't have a specific answer for. But yes, I think that would be very difficult in Alaska just because of our short growing season. I think they do all they can, but some materials are imported.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so I also have a question, and I know I've looked at this amendment so many times and tried to tweak with this several times in several ways, because I had a problem with the fermentation process of all, because you were going from 80%, now it's like basically 100%. So the of all, is this going to impact distilleries, wineries, breweries in any negative way? Because I don't want, like Senator Birch was talking about, any unintended consequences.
No, actually what this does is this impacts them significantly less. The way the 80% was written, it was really unattainable. This just says once you get all your materials into your place where you're going to manufacture, that the fermentation process must occur there. So it means that they truly will be manufacturing here, but it no longer tries to regulate every ingredient of that final product, 80% of it being from that place. So it frees them, says you must ferment on site, but your materials, where you obtain your materials, is not regulated.
I was going to have President Lee Ellis testify at this time. So, Lee, would you like to weigh in on this amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. So what Senator Machicki said is correct. We actually asked for a language change on the 80-20 just because it's sort of confusing as far as what it means to manufacture a product in our facility. So the fermentation means that's the production of alcohol that occurs here. And so that was the confusing part, is that, in essence, 90% of our product is water, and the other 10% being malts and hops and things like that. And so we don't manufacture any of those goods locally, obviously, because they're naturally processed commodities. So we just want to make sure that the fermentation occurs here, and then if we add things like berries or spruce tips or anything else like that, that those things fall under FDA regulation. And we are actually very happy with this language. and everybody, and I understand it's probably very confusing for most people who've never worked in alcohol manufacturing, what this means, but the 80-20, I believe, is staying on for distilleries because that's what they requested, and for us, just because we use such a wide variety of ingredients, we didn't want there to be any sort of confusion as far as regulation with AMCO, that they weren't having to come in and look at our recipes. And again, the federal TTB, has regulations on ingredients that we can use, as well as the FDA, so we adhere to those rules. So yeah, we're definitely in support of this amendment, and it will not have negative consequences. And as Senator Machicki said, it just clearly defines who is a manufacturer. And this language came about because there was a distillery that was in operation in Alaska some years ago that was bringing liquor up to the state of Alaska, and then they were adding some spices or some local ingredients and then calling it Alaskan made. And it's a very slippery slope. And again, if we don't regulate who is actually a manufacturer in the state, then we run into issues with managing and maintaining the three-tier system.
So, Lee, I just want, you absolutely support this amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, absolutely.
And you don't think any winery or distillery or brewery would have a problem with this, is that correct? Because our intention is not to create trouble for them.
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe, I can say for the brewery specifically, we were a little concerned about the 80-20 language. And again, because we're technical people, not legal language people, we asked for the change to fermentation. I can't speak for the distilleries and the wineries, but as far as I know, they are in support of it as well. And I did speak with some folks in the distilling world, and I think they chose to keep their 80-20 because sometimes they will import wash for their firm or their distillation process. So I think it works for everybody from what I understand.
Okay, sounds good, because we do have this in judiciary, but this is one of those red flags for me that I've tried to been for over a week. I've been wrestling with this amendment, and it's really nice to have you online, and we really appreciate it. So, okay, thank you very much. So I'm going to see if there's any other comments from committee members in regards to this. Is everybody's questions answered? Okay, with that, I will withdraw my objection. Is there any further objections? With that, U.8 has passed. So now we're going to give you all some closing remarks, but I've asked Senator Bishop to go over the last and final fiscal note, and I also see Brandon Spanos. I know you're with the Department of Revenue. I know you're online, but it says just for questions. I do not see anybody from DCCED, so we're going to go ahead and do their work. So, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think you're referencing OMB component number 2360. Mm-hmm. That's the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And the appropriation is corporations, businesses, and professional licensing. And the allocation is for the same corporations, businesses, professional licensing. It is a zero fiscal note. This was prepared by Sarah Chambers. On the analyses on page 2, it's very short, sweet, and to the point. And it explains the modification and exemption from the Alaska business licensing requirement for businesses that sell only liquor. If they sell anything other than liquor, then they will have to acquire a business license through Commerce. There's no fiscal impact to the department, and the fees are set in AS 43.70. Any excess revenue from collecting license fees at the department reverts to the general fund, ma'am.
Excellent. And so that's great. I mean, little source of revenue there. Any other comments on the fiscal note? Okay. So basically what we're going to do now, we have a few things I need to get on record. And then any closing comments from if I'm going to give everybody a chance, Tiffany, Anna, and Erica, if they have any final comments. But first, I just want everybody to know that I am working with a sponsor. We have been in a meeting with the Department of Law. We have chosen to do a couple things in Judiciary, the next committee referral of a few issues from Department of Law. Also, there's two more recommendations from the budget and audit that we're looking into, and I'm working with Senator McChicky's office and the Judiciary Chair in regards to that. And then one final issue that I wanted to clear up was the issue with the wineries and their licensing fees that I told everybody was one of the amendments that I brought up. We also have agreed to deal with that in Judiciary as well, but we think it only impacts six people, and there's a likelihood of just doing a small reduction because it's having a pretty significant impact in regards to their business. So I think most of the issues have that have raised up the entire session of working on this are being cleared, and you've been really good to work with. So thank you. Really appreciate that, Senator McChicky and Edra. So we are now going to give comments, first of all, to anybody online and you for closing remarks, and then I will give an opportunity to any committee member that wishes to make comments. So with that, we'll start with you, Senator McChicky.
I just wanted to thank you. Great work from the committee and from your staff and from you, Madam Chair. I think this is it has a lot of pages, and I appreciate you giving it the attention you needed to make some necessary amendments that make it a better bill. That's what the process is about, and I look forward to working with you and Judiciary and moving this along.
Outstanding. Edra, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Edra Morla, just after Senator McChicky. I would just also like to thank you and your committee aide and the other committee members for working on the bill. Appreciate it.
Excellent. And you guys did a really good job helping us with all the papers. There were so many papers with this bill. I've never seen anything like it. Look, and all this, it's been a crazy amount of work for staff, too. So I do want to say thanks to Nancy, Eric, and Dakota and Tasha, who've been helping in my office as well. So we're going to go ahead. And Anna Brawley, do you have any closing comments for Title IV rewrite?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Anna Brawley for the record. I don't have any additional comments. I'll just echo the thanks of everyone else.
Outstanding. And thank you. I know you've been working years on this. Tiffany Hall, thank you for your persistence. Would you like to make any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tiffany Hall with Recover Alaska. Just a sincere thanks to you and to all of the members on the committee for reviewing this so intensely and for helping us to move it on forward. Thanks very much.
Excellent. I know I'm going to be working with all of you, with Senator McChicky and Judiciary, and Senator Hughes has said she's going to be leaning heavily on us. So, Erica McConnell, I'd also like any final words from you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Erica McConnell with the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. I would just echo everybody's thanks to the committee members, Senator McChicky, the committee staff, and Senator McChicky's staff. Everybody has been terrific, and thank you very much.
Absolutely. Hey, Erica, you have been very, very dedicated to this cause, and we really appreciate your input a lot. So thank you very much. Okay, so with that, I'm going to look to what is the will? Senator Birch.
I just wanted to say, hopefully better late than never, I was supportive of passing something largely similar to this a year ago, and I appreciate the sponsors' good work and initiative in bringing this forward. There's a lot of thousands of hours of energy and effort put in by many members of the public, industry, just a tremendous amount of effort. I know anytime you start bringing up the issue of alcohol and managing alcohol and how you deal with it as a community, as a state, I think this really cuts a very fine balance in there, and it's really a good and a positive step forward. And as everyone else did, I would like to commend you for running a good meeting here and look forward to moving this out.
Thank you, Senator Birch. Bishop, do you have anything?
I do.
Okay, excellent. Senator Bishop.
I got one question for Senator Mitchell.
You've got it.
Well, this bill will raise some new revenue for the state, won't it?
It will. Most of the revenue that it raises is going to be put toward better managing alcohol sales and the impacts of alcohol in the state of Alaska. So,
but we're gonna, through the chair.
Yes.
We're gonna being able to start recovering hopefully some of that money that's coming in through the internet sales, if you will, or Amazon, or however it gets here, right?
Madam Chair, through the chair, Senator Bishop, it has a positive fiscal note. There's no doubt about that. Senator Bishop, the reason I got involved with this project is when they came to me early on, I'd already been working on the alcohol issues in our state, which I still think is probably 95% of the adverse substance abuse problem in our state.
I would concur with that follow-up.
That was my primary reason
for
getting involved.
And I agree with you. And I want to thank you and for your hard work on this. You've been working on this for about as long as I've been working on this next bill that's coming up. And I want to really thank your staff. It's done a yeoman's job. And Natasha, for all your hard work, and Chair Reinbold. So it's been a pleasure working with the committee.
Oh, thank you, Senator Bishop. We appreciate that. And Mia, I'm going to say thank you to you, okay, because before we took this on about 3 months ago, we had many meetings together, and I've asked her to be my chair before I even agreed to become chairman of this because of your experience last year. So wanted to say thank you to you as well. Okay, so with that, what is the will? Is ready?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 52, version 31-LS0004/U from as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes from committee.
Okay, and with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Going to gavel back in now that we got that heavy lift out. So thank you, team, for getting that heavy lift in really good shape out of our committee. So the next bill we have up is Senate Bill 50. It's the Employment Tax for Education Facilities. This is Senator Bishop's bill, and I believe Darwin Peterson. And I don't know, are both your staff or just okay? Darwin, you come on up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Bishop. I believe that the senator wanted to make some opening comments before I begin the testimony.
Please, so. Thank you very much, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. Just briefly, this is be the third time I've introduced this bill, and I can certainly understand the former senator that just left how long it. You know, it takes a while. It's a process. So Senate Bill 30, it's not a new concept. It's been around since territorial legislature, 1919, I think. And I know Darwin will get into the particulars on his presentation. But Senate Bill 30 goes back to 1980 when the bill was repealed. It was at $10 a head, one time a year from employed and self-employed wage earners. And the money was to raise money for fund education. And we took a little bit different twist on it. And I've taken a two-prong approach on helping education funding. And last year was the passage of the raffle bill, which put money inside the classroom. And this bill here, if it ever becomes law, is to go for facilities maintenance and school construction. And I really believe new revenues have to be any part of the discussion going forward. I've been saying that for 5 years, albeit this is small, it's symbolic, but I think it's important. Under Article Section
7, Section 1, the legislature has the constitutional responsibility to provide quality education system for all Alaska's children. I think we do a good job of that here in the legislature, albeit some people would debate the issue. Today's per capita state spending is on par with 1996 when you factor in inflation, and those sources are cited from the Ledge Finance Division. We have that backup document in your binder. And while expenditures are about the same as they were back then, revenues are not. Meanwhile, our schools and other state-owned facilities are in disrepair. And, you know, we've had a minimal capital budget now for the last 5 years. I know when I came to work here for the administration in 2006, I was shocked to learn that the state had $1.9 billion in deferred maintenance. And that was shocking to me as somebody that came from the private sector, contractor world in construction. And I know the gentleman to my left understands exactly what I'm talking about. I was always taught that deferred maintenance was a liability and on a balance sheet. And so 1980, the bill was repealed. This head tax has been introduced 15 times. The last most recent attempt was in, I believe, 1991 or 92, when then Governor Hickel introduced the bill, the governor's bill. And I've introduced it over the last three legislatures, 2015, 2017, and 2019. Typically, on the books today, Department of Education Early Development is about $112 million of deferred maintenance and $180 or $90 million of school construction. And according to Department of Labor's most recent numbers from the department, there are 441,596 employed individuals in Alaska. 20.9% of those are residents, and that's a total of about $2.5 billion a year leaving this state. And I've always said that, you know, we talk about we're a resource state. We know that. You know, how much value added do we get in this state from our resources that leave here? And it's just a heartburn for me as one person. Nothing wrong with non-residents working here. I'd like to see the number lower. You know, we always want to employ more Alaskans. But that's the world we live in. We're hovering around a 19 to 20% non-resident hire rate. But that money's leaving here. We have no income tax, no school head tax. And I would bet good money that money's being taxed in their home states where they live and being used for their schools. So... no capital budget the last 5 years other than the match. The deferred maintenance isn't healing itself up. It's not getting better. And my last comment is I worked for a gentleman in Fairbanks by the name of Joe Jakovich when I went to high school. And my first paycheck, he brought me in his office and sat down and showed me my deductions and explained what they were. And he said, kid, this $5 here for the school tax, that's paying for your education over at Lathrop High School. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your opening comments. Darwin, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Bishop. As the Senator mentioned, from 1919 to 1980, Alaska had an annual employment head tax for the purpose of collecting revenues to help fund our schools. The tax went through numerous transformations, but it always charged an equal amount to each employed individual. When it was repealed in 1980, the tax was $10 per person, which, accounting for inflation, has the equivalent value of $30 today, which is how we came up with the number of the tax in this bill. Senate Bill 50 proposes to revive the repealed head tax on employed individuals, both residents and non-residents. It would collect $30 from each person employed in the state. The tax would be withheld from an employee's first paycheck each calendar year. The tax is deductible from an individual's federal income tax return. According to the most recent statistics from the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development and the United States Census Bureau, The state has approximately 441,596 employed individuals in the state. 20.9% or 85,000 of them are non-residents, which results in $2.5 billion leaving the state's economy each year. And as the senator mentioned, in most cases, that's being taxed by the non-resident's home state. For the committee's information, the breakdown of those employed individuals, the 441,596, is 407,255 of those are wage and salary workers, per the Department of Labor and Workforce Development's report on 2017 non-resident workers in Alaska, the most recent data that we have. And the United States Census Bureau, also 2017 data, the most recent data that we have, estimates that there are 34,341 self-employed individuals in Alaska. Of that number, 11,329 are self-employed in their own incorporated businesses, and the other 23,012 are self-employed in non-incorporated businesses. Based on those numbers, at $30 per person, the education head tax is estimated to bring in approximately $13 million per year, $13,240,230 to be exact. That's an estimate. The revenue collected would be deposited into the state's general fund and accounted for separately to pay for the growing maintenance and construction needs of Alaska's schools. According to the Department of Education and Early Development, the state's share of the FY20 major school maintenance list totals $113 million, and the FY20 school construction list totals $190 million, for a total of just over $300 million. I think it's also important for the committee to understand that that's not a universal list. That is not the entirety of the deferred maintenance or school construction needs in the state, because it does cost the school districts money when they want to get a project on the major maintenance list. They have to go through a process where they get engineering estimates, cost estimates. There's a cost to that for the school district. So there are a lot of major maintenance, deferred maintenance needs in the schools that they're not applying for right now because the state just hasn't had the money over the last 5 years, like the senator mentioned. We haven't been appropriating money towards major maintenance or school construction, so there's no incentive. It's actually a waste of money for the school districts to apply for projects on the major maintenance list. So in your packets, there are a couple of recent editorials from the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, as well as supporting documents from the Yukon Koyukuk School District, the Denali Borough, the National Education Association of Alaska, and the Alaska Superintendents Association. I'll note that other school districts and borough assemblies are currently placing this item on their agenda to discuss and decide whether or not they want to pass similar resolutions or letters of support. So we look forward to those coming in the days ahead. With that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions, or if you would prefer, I can also walk the committee through a sectional analysis at your preference.
Well, let's see, first of all, if there's questions, because I know I have a few questions, but I don't know if anybody else. Okay, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this bill. and I guess my question is for Darwin. Would this be considered a dedicated fund? And if not, how do we get around that it's not considered one?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, no, it's not considered a dedicated fund. I would would refer you to page 4, lines 18 and 19, where it states that nothing in this section creates a dedicated fund. We're constitutionally prohibited from creating dedicated funds. So the subsection before that, section 43-45-061, subsection B, which is also page 4, line 16, states that the legislature may appropriate the estimated amounts to be collected and separately accounted for under A of this section, which is the collection of the head tax, into the Educational Facilities Maintenance and Construction Fund, which is established in this act. And so the intent would be for the legislature to use these funds to pay for deferred maintenance and school construction going into the future, but no, it does not create a dedicated fund.
Okay. Thank you. And then is this considered an income tax? And if not, could you explain the difference between a head tax and what you and an income tax?
I guess I would say that it is an income tax in the sense that it taxes one's income, but it's not a bracketed income tax like has been proposed in the past. This is just a flat tax. Mm-hmm. So everybody, no matter what your income is, everybody would pay the same $30 per annum.
Okay, and then one final question, Madam Chair.
Senator.
And Darwin, I know you've been around and helped craft budgets in the past, so this is sort of a philosophical question, but why doesn't the legislature include maintenance when we pass budgets that include school construction monies? I mean, this seems like taking care of the buildings that we've helped fund is kind of a part of our job, but it apparently we don't do that. And do you have any comment on that, or maybe the bill sponsor?
I'm happy to start and allow the senator to follow up if he thinks I misspeak, but I think it's just been a simple fact of over the last 5 years in the state's budget problems that the operations of the state are ongoing, whereas capital budgets can be pulled back temporarily while we wait for additional revenue to come on. And for the last 5 years, there has been very little, if any, additional revenue. Therefore, I think capital budgets have suffered because of that.
Thank you.
Go
ahead.
Just like a little. I like the title of the bill. An act imposing an annual education facilities maintenance and construction tax on net earnings of self-employment and wages relating to the administration and enforcement of educational facilities maintenance and construction tax. So, I like facilities and construction tax better, but it's still a tax, and we still have an obligation. And I think, Senator, that's maybe more of a policy question for us, and that's why we're having the conversation. And thanks to the Chairman for letting us have this conversation.
Senator Birch.
I just wanted to commend the sponsor for bringing this forward. I too remember my first pay stub. I think it was about probably 18 years old, and it was actually signed by my paycheck was actually signed by Jim Dalton, who ended up of NPR fame and NPRA fame and the Dalton Highway. But as I recall, I think it was $10. And I remember looking at every single dollar that went out the door, and I understood that it was affiliated with and went to education. I obviously didn't know about dedication of funds and so forth, but to the question that came up regarding maintenance, that is, it's no different than we have with our homes. You have to fix a roof once in a while. You have to paint the house once in a while. You have to repair the driveway. And I think deferred maintenance is exactly that. It's maintenance that needs to happen, but you can push it off for a while. But when you look at the square footage of space that we have, just in the school districts alone, particularly in rural communities, it's a very significant number. It's a very, and periodically, I know it's kind of accumulated. There's various estimates for how much it costs to for routine maintenance and upkeep, but it's a big number, and I think this is a step in the right direction, and I'm excited to see this out here. I think it does help educate a new generation of Alaskans and into the fact that maybe it is necessary to help pay for things. So anyway, I look forward to the discussion. Thank you. Thanks for bringing this forward.
Okay, so I guess I have questions. First of all, there's a lot of homeschools, and I didn't get the number, but I know it's the biggest growing area. And to me, why should they have to pay? If they're having school in their home, they're not
they still have to pay their property taxes. Let's say if they end up paying $10,000 in property taxes and $5,000 of it ends up going to the schools, you know, so they already are paying it, but yet they're still having their own kids in their own school. Now we're adding another tax on top of them. I mean, this is going to tax everybody, whether they have kids in the system or not. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. Everybody in the state that's employed would have to pay $30 per year. I think that everybody in the state benefits from having an educated populace, and not everybody in the state is able to homeschool their kids, and we are constitutionally required to provide a public school system for all children, and that benefits everyone in the state.
Right. I've read the Constitution many times. It doesn't mean we have to have 54 school districts and a $2.2 billion budget with some of the lowest outcomes in some areas. So, you know, it's frustrating to me to see, and then we have some of the worst standards possible in education right now with our math standards, and that's why I am a very resistant to education, increasing education funding at this time, because we have some of the worst math standards that you possibly could have with the Common Core new math standards, and I think we're actually injuring our children and their future because of the standards. And I know we're getting a little labored, but people in my area want to know why. You know, why should, if they're paying, you know, a huge amount of property taxes, how about the areas that are not paying a property tax? The state is already fully funding, you know, that area, and so how are you going to know where this money goes? Like, you can't have designated funds or dedicated funds, and so this could just be a bunch more money in the general fund, isn't that correct?
Madam Chair, on your point of residents of rural Alaska where there is not a property tax base, those residents that are employed would now be contributing, whereas now they're not. So that's one benefit. And I'm sorry, I forgot the second
point. Well, how would we know that the money would ever go out there? You know, they're contributing.
Sure.
You know, we could, other areas could be garnishing and then putting all the money back into, you know, let's say a village school or something, you know, and they're not ever going to see the benefit of that.
Sure.
So there's, it's not tied to the local community, and that's why I'm much more for local community control.
And I believe it may be in your packets. If it's not, I apologize, and I'll make sure that I get a copy to your committee staff. But there is the Department of Education and Early Development's major maintenance fund list, mm-hmm. as well as a school construction fund list. That's a prioritized list that is compiled by the Department of Education Early Development. So the funds would be allocated towards those projects in priority order. So that's where the funds would go, would be the intent.
Okay, so basically there's no guarantee that if the funds are collected in a certain area, they will be spent in that area. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. It's statewide effort.
Okay, so I mean, just you know, I'm just having a frank discussion of concerns in regards to this. I want to see if there's any doesn't look like there, anybody else you know has any concerns in regards to this. But I had the same concern as Senator Costello, and I know we had this conversation in the office probably 2 months ago. In regards to this, could easily, why, you know, $30 can turn into $3,000. So it's like opening Pandora's box to me, because government never seems to be able to get enough, no matter what. The government always wants more, and so that bothers me. That, you know, if there was a way that it didn't go above this for a long time, you know, if it was only, you know, to the consumer index, you know, something like that, that would be good. But my fear of this, and no one could provide me any insurances, this could end up just being completely dwarfed into a general bracketed income tax.
Madam Chair, that's always a prerogative of future legislatures. They could abandon this and go to a full broad-based income tax that's bracketed and based on net income. That's a prerogative of future legislatures. So, but I would say that doing nothing is also not an answer.
And basically, this also could be used as the vehicle for that, because this, from everything I can tell, sets up the framework for an income tax. And we had this discussion, and you said yes, you know, in the office, that it absolutely could morph into a full-fledged income tax.
I don't disagree with that, ma'am, but I can't sit here in good conscience, because we don't have another $14 billion to spend out of savings. And I'm trying to do something to put this state on a pathway to help the deferred maintenance schedule that we got. I've got kids that have had no drinking water in 3 years inside a building. And like I said, the deferred maintenance is there. It's not healing itself up. I don't disagree with what you said, but for me, to do nothing is not an option. I'll keep bringing it forward.
And so, and I appreciate you guys' courage, you know, and your willingness to bring something with a tax, because a lot of people, there's huge resistance, you know, out there right now, because we see a lot of lobbying for education, and we see lots of travel, and we see them going down. You know, I wish it was prioritized for infrastructure. I genuinely do. I think it's important to have good, because I know Greening Middle School is you know, in my district, and it's been tough, because that school is so old and really has needed some significant, you know, but we've never sent 10. There seems to be squeaker wheels. And then they'll go in East High, which I graduated from East, and they'll put a Taj Mahal theater in that building. It's in that we don't get a theater at all at Eagle River High School, you know, for the military kids and us kids, and it just doesn't seem fair to me that you can go to East High and have this glamorous, and that's what I worry about. Maintenance could be used for, you know, certain schools where they get this glamorous, and then other ones are really getting the short end of the stick. We didn't get a stadium. We got nothing but classrooms, you know, in mine. We didn't get a, you know, anything basically to Eagle River High where my kids were. So trust me, I feel the pain of maintenance issues and things like that, but it just seems like there's a tremendous inequality where there's Taj Mahal schools and then there's the, you know, Greening Middle Schools that are, you know, cut to the absolute basics. And I'm a huge believer in wood shops. I'm a huge believer in auto shops and, you know, all those kind of things within the school. So that's why I lean toward, I mean, you know, where I think this could potentially be, you know, just a super good idea where we keep our schools in super good shape. But I also want to start a program where, and I've brought this up at least 10 years to the schools, and no one listens, of course, but having a lawn maintenance and health, you know, lawn and health, you know, taking care of the health of the school outdoors and having the kids participate in a program and then have competitions, you know, citywide. Who can have the nicest looking lawn? And it's something that is that's a pride thing, you know, for the schools. And that would really help with the outdoor maintenance, not the facility maintenance, but it would help tremendously with the maintenance, and it would also get the kids engaged. And I think that's super important. But it is something that I do think, you know, needs to be discussed. And I'll also say one thing that I love about this bill is that it's same fee for everybody. So I like that, you know, where there's just a flat tax. If there's going to be a tax, I think a flat tax is a more fair tax in regards to something that everybody uses, you know, in the schools. But anyway, thank you. I know the homeschools, you know, I do feel for those guys, and I probably do some sort of exclusion for them. But anyway, I do think it was an important discussion to have. Is there any other comments, any other final comments from anybody? Darwin, would you like to make any
no, thank you,
rebuttals
Madam Chair.
Or anything? Okay. Well, I guess today our meeting is going to be a little bit short then. So we right now do not have a meeting for this Thursday scheduled, and right now our work is dwindling. There's several bills still in this committee, but I'm working with leadership on priorities, and so right now this may be our last meeting, but I'm going to just put TBA, to be announced, just in case things come up and we get some bills over from the House or priorities, or we end up deciding to move one of these or other bills, such as the military licensure bill, forward, because there's still some things that are will possibly be moving out of this committee. But did want to have this discussion, so thank you, Darwin. Thank you for your courage. It is a good discussion, so thank you very much. Okay, with that, we're going to gavel out at 2:20.